Welcome to a Fear the Boot bonus episode. If you do not normally listen to Fear the Boot, I'll give the same disclaimer I usually do, which is these episodes are not on the topics we normally cover and also tend to get into areas that are, let's just say, a bit more colorful than our shows normally get. So
it's going to be disturbing.
Yeah, you know, so if you're looking for a podcast that talks seriously about RPGs, go get our last episode. Don't start with a bonus.
This disclaimer doesn't work.
Or just Google something else.
I was talking to somebody the other day. I apologize. I can't remember who it was, but I was talking to a new listener that started on a bonus episode.
That was Rotary God.
Oh, okay, yeah.
The guy we met at Scottish Arms.
Oh, that's right. Oh, yeah, exactly.
Yeah, John, that's his real name.
Yeah, so it doesn't work. So
yeah,
just go ahead and keep listening.
There's a funny and stupid story there. So this guy on the forums hits us up and says, hey, I live in the St. Louis area. And I said, okay, that's pretty cool. I said, yeah, we ought to go kick back a beer sometime. He's like, sure, so let me know when you guys are going out somewhere. So we went down to this Scottish pub called the Scottish Arms, which I think we've mentioned on the show. And people who were there for Fear the Con, I guess it was three. That was one of the places we went out to eat during the pre-con or post-con stuff. So this guy says, okay, I'll be in the Scottish Arms because I'm going to beat you guys over there because I'm going to be there about 4:30. We weren't going to be there till about 6. I'll just be doing something obvious or whatever, and you can just come in and grab me because we have no idea what each other looks like. So I walk into Scottish Arms and sitting there right up front, first table right by the door, is a guy sitting all by himself sorting his magic cards. Clearly, this must be the man I'm looking for. So I walk up to this guy, and I did not even know his real name at the time. I later found out it was John. I had no idea what his real name was. So I walk up to this guy, I said, hey, are you Rotary? He's like, excuse me? I said, are you Rotary? I said, I'm looking to meet someone, and I'm guessing you're him.
He said, no, I'm Lions Club.
He's like, no. I'm like, oh, okay. So real embarrassed, I walk past. Walk around, and he's already sitting with the other guys in the back of the restaurant. It's like, what the hell are the chances of this? So, all right. This
magic's coming back, dude.
Yeah, but I mean, one guy, first table in the restaurant, by himself, sitting right at the door, sorting his magic cards as visibly as he can.
Everybody goes to Scottish Arms. Nerds go to Scottish Arms. It has European shit in it.
I guess, but all right. So, that's not the context of this bonus episode. What I want you to do is, of course, get into bed, tuck yourself in, turn down the lights, go ahead and turn off the alarm. You don't need to go to work tomorrow. Work's stupid anyway. But you might want to get your children out of the room and make sure they're accounted for, because this bonus episode, this bedtime story episode, is going to be entitled Chris and the Crimson Pumpkin. Because this is why the state requires Chris to put a Crimson Pumpkin on his door at Halloween. Because he is not allowed to interact with
children.
Wait,
is that actually a thing?
Oh, that's a real thing, yes.
Oh, yeah.
It's in several states where on Halloween, registered sex offenders have to put a crimson pumpkin, that's a printout that's issued by the state on their door that says a sex offender lives here, children should not come to this door. That is a real thing. I'm not making that up.
Oh, Lordy, who's getting like 10 of those on their door when I see them on Halloween?
That'd be a great prank, just go door to door, dropping off those off on people that are literally not sex offenders. Lordy, lordy.
Well, the time to do it, though, is when they're actually kids at the door. You walk up there and you're like, whoa, 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 whoa. And then you just replace the pumpkins and they just walk away.
Could you just give this to your parents and then close the door?
So one time at work, we were looking at one of these websites that has the registered sex offenders. And we picked one guy that we were going to pick on. And we found a picture of his wife, and we came up with this whole story. We poisoned his DNS, so when we sent him the link to the site, it was going to take him to a page that we were hosting on one of our desktops, and we created this whole fake entry for the guy's wife on this website. And he's like, dude, is this? No way. He's like, I don't believe you're hosting it. So he went back to his computer, brought it up, and I said, we had the whole thing DNS poisoned to send him over there, and sure enough, he brings it up on his computer, and it pops up. He's like, this has got to be some sort of mistake. We had him going for like 15 minutes before we told him what we'd done.
Wow. Like wow. ipconfig/dns/flush. Or is it flush DNS?
We manage the DNS servers.
Oh.
There's no flushing.
I guess that's true. For a home user, that'll fix it. But for, I guess if you're managing your own DNS servers, yeah, he's kind of screwed. Alrighty, so, Chris.
Yes.
Let's go ahead and take this in chronological order. You said you had a story about the first time you got drunk.
You want to do that one first?
Yeah, we got to take these chronologically. We have to explain how you got where you are today.
I was in eighth grade, so that would put me probably, let's see, I was an older eighth grader, so I was about 14, I guess, at that time. And
100.
Was that, would that be right?
Underage.
That'd be right.
Yeah,
because yeah, my birthday's yeah. in September, so anyway.
Yeah.
Yeah, September oh, I'm sorry. Of 1386.
Yes. See, I thought it was going to be, he was at a party and they ran out of wine, so they had to talk to
this bearded guy. This bearded guy waved his hands around.
It was the best wedding Chris ever attended.
It was. And the guy was going, why didn't you serve this stuff first?
I'm sorry, Chris. Anyway.
So I called up, and by this time we had already started gaming and everything. So and the people I game with were my neighbor, his name was Shane, and then my other neighbor down the road on the other side, his name was Eric. So we weren't gaming this particular weekend night, and Shane is 2 years older than I was, so he was able to drive, and you know, so he was kind of cooler in that sense. And it was weekend, so I called him up, and I'm like, because we weren't gaming, and I said, so you know, what are you doing? And he was like real dodgy. He's like, well, nothing. And I'm like, no, really, come on. What are you doing? I mean, I'm sitting here at home. You know, it's just me and my dad. There's nothing going on here. Like, what's going on? He's like, well, I just got some people over. We're just kind of hanging out. Oh, well, what are you guys doing? And then he's really dodgy again. And I'm like, come on, man. What are you doing? He's like, oh, we're just drinking beer and watching porn. And right away,
did I motion it? Yeah.
Yeah.
Right away,
I knew it was
right away
on.
I'm like,
can I come over?
And come on, let me come over. So he's like, all right, fine. So, I mean, I literally was in the basement when I was talking to him. So I was zipping upstairs and I like ran past the living room, yelled at my dad as he was watching TV. I'm like, going over to Shane's, be back later. And I just boom, out the door. And I mean, I ran, he lived probably about a half mile away, and I just sprinted the entire way there. So I get over to his house, you know, and I'm like, hells yeah, let's go. And so he crack open a Miller Lite and I start drinking it. Sure enough, yeah, there's porn going on there. And so here I am, you know, 14 years old. And the best I'd had at this point was the soggy Penthouse magazine that was hidden in one of the abandoned buildings that was, you know, in our, because we lived out in the country as well. And so there was plenty of abandoned places to hide porno mags. But of course, rain would come in, they'd get wet. You know?
Yeah, rain.
Yeah. Well, it was hazardous because you had to be really careful when opening, and you couldn't really turn the pages, so you had to make sure.
Well, it was before AIDS, so I mean, how bad could it have been?
I know it sounds bad.
I do have to say a quick thing. Is there anyone here on the show who did not at some point in their childhood or adolescence find Common Grounds porn or Woods porn or whatever?
Oh, yeah, I did. I mean, that's like a red.
I had AOL 3.0 by the time my balls dropped.
Okay, I guess that's true.
That is you something that internet. Is sadly lost on today's youth, yeah. By the way.
I know. Okay, I found porn in the woods too.
Oh, yeah.
So.
Oh, yeah. It was a rite of passage for the older folks.
Absolutely.
Yeah. Who the hell
Absolutely.
Left it there? How did this work?
Well, that's the mystery.
Here's the thing is,
I didn't leave any there.
You're a teenager.
Yeah, no.
Steal your dad's porno mag.
Yeah.
You can't get caught with it, no, so you go hide it somewhere in the woods, and then another group of kids is coming along playing in the same woods, and they find your stash.
I see.
And this is how it worked. I mean, this is just how it went.
Yeah.
Yeah, and then
that
when
was
VCRs
the internet
came, back
then, that, huh?
Exactly. That was the porn internet at that point was very manual.
Yeah, when VCRs came out, you'd have the one guy would manage to get a hold of a video, and then everyone else would bring them, you know, blank tapes, and it'd be having some sort of video copying conference going on.
Mm-hmm.
When you got a hold of somebody else's tape, whether it was your dad's or whatever, you had to be really careful about that. So when you put it in the VCR, you had to reset the counter to zero so you could rewind it back to that spot because you didn't want to get busted because, you know, of course, you know, your dad has an encyclopedic memory as to where he left off on that tape. You know, no,
as
he doesn't,
does every
but you
man.
Think he did because you're paranoid about getting
Let's
busted.
Let's see. It was left off at the last point he came.
Yeah, I stopped
the video.
You don't want to think about that because that's like thinking about your parents doing it. Your parents did it only enough time to have as many kids as they have, and you know that's true. Anyway,
so
I get over to Shane's house, and I'm putting down the Miller Lite, and I'm watching the porn and all that, and I could not tell you what movie it was. All I can say it was for the time it was awesome, and being this the first time I'd ever really. Drank heavily in any way, shape, or form, it didn't take me very long to get drunk. So after the porn was done, everybody kind of took...
Hold on. What year are we talking here?
I was in eighth grade, so this would have been 85, maybe?
BC.
Wow, yeah.
Oh, my God. Yeah. I'm Chris's jack-off son.
True. Okay. That's a classic. That's some vintage porn there going
on. Oh, yeah. Yeah. So that gets done. Everybody kind of like takes a break for some reason. And they continue to drink.
Hey, hey, just pause the tape. Just give me 5 or 10 minutes.
Yeah,
and
I'll be right back.
So it's funny. There were five bathrooms
in the house, and they were all filled. It was amazing.
Well, you know, when you actually looking back on it now, you think, you know, what could have been more homoerotic than about 7 guys sitting around drinking beer, watching porn with no outlet at all? Anyway, so
I don't
so
know. Get, bag so of cookies.
By this time, I had no idea.
10 dicks and 9 butts.
I have no idea what you just said.
It's okay. Go on.
Okay. So by this time, definitely faced, and I probably maybe honestly had about 2 or 3. So then they decide to put on Led Zeppelin's "Song Remains the Same," and. and this was after, and I think somebody had been passing a joint around, which I actually, I'm going to sound like Clinton on this one, but I did try, but honestly, the roach clip was so small. I mean, I got nothing but the air that surrounded it as I tried to inhale. So there was like absolutely nothing there. Anyway, so we're all sitting there, we're drinking, and throughout the night and throughout the evening during the movie, Shane kept encouraging me. He's like, you know, hey, Huss, You gotta finish your beer, man. You gotta finish your beer. Drink up, buddy. And he kept, you know, pushing my beer at me. And of course, you know, like a stupid idiot, and I'm drunk, and I kept drinking it. So I find I don't remember how I got home. I don't even remember if I went home. I don't even remember what happened the next day. I just at some point I got home. I didn't find out till like months later. You know, and this is quote unquote my good friend Shane, by the way. What he had been doing the entire night after I had initially gotten wasted was going around and taking everybody's bottoms from their beer cans, pouring them into my beer can, and that was the beer can that he was pushing on me to drink. So basically, I'm drinking everybody's backwash the entire night, and I had no clue that that was even what was going on. And it didn't even matter because I just kept getting drunker and drunker.
That's horrifying.
I'm surprised, honestly, that I did not vomit that night. I really am.
Did you eat any cookies?
I did not eat any cookies, so I tossed none as well.
Count yourself lucky, my friend.
No, I made sure I didn't eat anything.
All right, so which one comes next chronologically? Master 3 Balls or your character who got the scars?
The character who got the scars would be the next one.
Okay, go on.
I'm sensing a pattern now.
So this was actually, we were playing Earth Dawn, and for those of you that have never played the game, the character I had in this.
Oh, and I will give a brief aside here to keep us from starting a big ass storm. For anyone who's easily upset by stories of abuse, stop the episode right now. Chris, continue.
Okay.
Yeah, we're talking about Earth Dawn.
I mean,
this is Earth Dawn. I don't know. This is not going anywhere pleasant.
I personally love that game. That is a great game.
We're not surprised.
So you the character Dave. I had was a duelist, and for those who don't know, duelists are kind of like they're
people that believe in both a body and soul.
Yes. No, they are they're the Inigo Montoyas, basically, of that game. Is who the duelists are. So they're very extravagant sword fighters, and they have all kinds of things that allow them to fight very well and very cool with the sword. That's just the whole basic of that character type. So I had a good character history. I had some good background, and there was definitely some goals that this character wanted to accomplish. And this was a situation where we had multiple DMs running the same campaign. I ran things for a while. This other guy, Dave, also ran stuff for a while. And then there was a third guy, one of the third guys in our group. He ran some stuff for a little bit, but it was primarily Dave and myself. So we were on a shift when Dave was running things. Now, I don't have a problem in game with coming up and having enemies coming into the game, or even necessarily having bad things happen to my character. But every player goes into a game with a certain idea of what they want for the character, how they might want him to come out. And they certainly, you know, they don't want anything really horrible to happen to this character. If you've got a noble ideal in this character, you don't want absolutely horrible things personally to happen to this character. Dave clearly, as a GM, did not subscribe to that belief. So he was running stuff, and there was this other swordmaster, other duelist of sorts. His name, I think he just kind of went by the name of Scar or something like that, although it wasn't Mufasa's brother. And what ended up happening was I got into a sword fight with with Scar, and he was much higher level or a much higher circle than I was. So this was a fight that I lost, and my character got knocked unconscious.
You should have flipped him back into the ashes, down into the hyenas.
Yes, I should have, or at least started a stampede to kill him. I lost the duel, and I ended up getting knocked unconscious, which was not good because I didn't have anybody else in the party around to back me up. Basically, what happened at that point, and I was not pleased at all, to say the least. Dave described, basically, he said that I woke up, my character wakes up, and I noticed right away that I think a lot of my gear and stuff was missing. They had taken some of my gear. But then he noticed that I had pain on my face, and I felt, and I had matching pair of scars, like one underneath each cheekbone. And then he goes on to say that your pelvis area just really hurts. And I'm like, really? And he's like, yeah, you kind of look around and you notice you have a reddish stain on your backside. And for some reason, upon closer investigation, your ass is bleeding.
Chris, how old were you when this happened?
Oh, this was, we were in our 20s. This was probably around 2000.
This was,
like,
this
was probably
this
late
college
90s.
Experimentation.
Yeah. And so he did not come out and explicitly say that.
Oh, no, he came out.
That my character was ass raped by Scar. But that is clearly what happened. Because I think even when I woke up, I was in a similar pose as
Boba Fett.
What's his face? What's his face from Pulp Fiction? When he was stuck in the pawn shop.
Marsalis
Wallace. That's right.
Yeah, Marsalis Wallace.
Did you keep playing the character after this, Chris?
I had to, in the sense that, first of all, I was pissed. There's never been a time when I've been playing a game where I've been literally just flat out angry at something that someone else has done, either to the group or to me or whatever. Or I've just never been, like, you know, mad at another human being at the game table in that way. But honest to God, this was the first time that had ever happened to me. And I was just enraged at this whole thing. But it, in a certain sense, it did make me want to continue to play, only because now I had to essentially beat Dave, and I had to beat him bad.
A fisting was in order.
Yeah, in a certain sense, yes, it was. And I was, it just, and you know, the thing was, is that never, that situation never got resolved. When I took back over GMing, the campaign had gotten to a point where I couldn't necessarily have my character go back and do that. Plus, I also knew that would be kind of a dick move to go back and have me go and beat this NPC that he had created. That was, you know, that was not
a
cool.
Dick move. Yeah.
Yeah. It was
a
dick move
in
another sense.
That.
Absolutely. So I was, but let me tell you, oh my gosh, I had never, even to this day, I just, there had never been an incident where I've ever been that upset at what has happened to one of my characters. It really.
Yeah, the odd thing is, it sounds like Chris was more interested in having his character go back and take care of the character that did it, and he doesn't have the anger towards the GM who was responsible for this.
Oh, I was mad. I was mad at him for doing that because of the fact that I had this noble idea for my character. You know, he's, like I said, he's the Inigo Montoya of this game world, and I wanted to play him as such and be this honorable, swashbuckling kind of character. And then what ends up happening, you know, he loses a duel, and then he gets bent over, hump, and ass raped. I mean, it's just,
it's
not
more noble than that. I mean,
oh, yeah, really. I mean, that's just a mean thing to do.
That sounds
at the table.
That's right. That sounds like Roman nobility to me.
Chris wanted to be awake so he could give a reach around.
Yeah.
Oh, yeah. Yeah. Oh, my gosh. When he said, yeah, oh, and your character falls unconscious, I'm like, oh, crap. You kind of had that sinking feeling that something bad was going to happen. And sure enough, yeah, it did.
All righty, Chris. Let's talk about
Master Three Balls. But we've mentioned Master Three Balls before on the podcast.
Well, there was...
But it's never survived.
There was a bonus episode that we had Chris Mace guest on, and this was the one that we mentioned losing. The audio got destroyed. Like, not we raced it. Skype and Callburner ate it.
Fired against us.
Yeah, and we do not have the audio. And in this, we were talking about the demographics of gamers. And Chris mentioned that growing up, he actually gamed with a whole bunch of jocks.
I did.
And even into adulthood, gamed with, you know, football players and things like that. And this leads to the following story. Chris, go ahead and take it away.
Well, actually, just to jump back to that thing about gaming with jocks, when in college, yeah, I lived in the dorms, and I taught four of the other people on there how to play D&D. and they were all Phi Ed majors, and I was a theater major, so it was odd for the fact that we would talk in the first place. But they exhibited some of the strangest behavior at the gaming table of any other players I've witnessed. These guys, there were two of these guys at the table who would frequently pull their genitalia out of their shorts or out of their pants, and then call out to the other guy across the table.
Did you game with Chris?
No, I have to say, and you can back me up on this, I have never pulled my penis out at the mics or at the role-playing table.
I
have dropped trow. I have shown you my tidy whities or my Batman underwear, as the case may be, but I have never taken my junk out for all to see.
The only game I've ever taken my penis out that wasn't like that kind of game is beer pong. I've done that once or twice in critical moments to create shaken effect and shock value to try to make somebody fail a will save.
All right, Chris, go on.
They would honestly, one of the guys, he'd pull his stuff out and he'd be like, hey, Rich, look at my nuts. And he would just pull on the whole package and he would stretch it out as far as he could go. And I would just be sitting there behind the screen, thankfully, be like, what the hell's going on? You know,
this
why
is
are
the
you
most
doing this?
Homoerotic episode we have ever recorded.
Okay, so you're sitting there playing D&D and one of these like football players is sitting there batwinging. Is that
what basically what he's doing? And the funny thing was, they all of them, to a man, made fighters. They all made fighters. I had a party of fighters, except for one who was a fighter rogue, a fighter thief.
So they all chose the worst class in D&D 3 and waved each other's d*** around.
This was second.
They were sword
this
fighting.
This was second edition.
Okay, well, fighter was a little bit better in second edition. Not much.
Yeah. So, but they, well, and this sounds really bad in light of what I just said.
Did this have any context in the game, or was it just nuts out?
Nope, had absolutely no context in the game whatsoever. We did a lot of combat, but it had absolutely nothing to do with the game. Although they did give me one of my best gaming moments in the sense that when they encountered kobolds for the very first time, and they had no frame of reference as to what a kobold was, they were extremely nervous and scared of these kobolds. I mean, they had no frame of reference as to how weak a kobold was, and their first encounter with him in the sewers of the city, they were like freaking out, and they were really trying to figure out exactly how best to deal with these guys, which was an experience in itself.
Take their d*** out and wave them at
them. Yeah, so they solved the problem by taking out their penis and hitting him in the face, I guess.
I swear to God, and these were jocks?
Oh, yeah.
These were football players?
These were all, well, no, these guys weren't football players, but they were all Phi Ed majors.
Oh, so you're telling me the guy who told me to take a shower in gym class takes his d*** out all the time.
With other guys.
Yes, with the other gym teachers.
Why
and then
do you
they
think
look
he went
at each
to take a shower?
Yeah. Oh, boy.
Mm-hmm. Anyway, yeah, that has
and
nothing...
I went to all-male school.
That has nothing to do with Master Three Balls, though.
Okay, well, what is Master Three Balls' story?
So Master Three Balls. This was relatively recently. This was within the last 10 years. And before I moved down to Iowa, I was running my one real successful campaign and that survived multiple players with multiple characters and all kinds of changing things and numerous events and change-ups and everything. But this campaign...
You mean your most successful campaign? You're not telling me you've only had one successful campaign in your life.
It all depends how you want to define campaign. If you want to define campaign from a beginning point to an end point, yes, honestly, I've only had one that I would determine to be something like that. I've had others where they've been good.
I haven't had one yet. So.
Where they've been good, but then they just kind of trailed off. But this was... Wow. This
people
was,
needing to learn how to write an ending. Jeez.
This was... But we got sidelined by a lot of the same things you did. We'd either change games, we'd get bored, there'd be a lull, there'd be
Here's
a long
the thing,
gap.
Though, Chris. I'm like, you know, a fraction of your age, and I run really ambitious campaigns. Even I have completed campaigns, like multiple campaigns, plural.
Yeah, no, I've never, as far as me as a GM completing ones, as a player, there's been a couple where we've gone through a certain series of adventures and completed them as like miniature campaigns, but then carried on with the characters. I'm talking about we created characters, we ran through a long, successful, you know, arc of a story, came to an end, we put those characters away and never played them again. That I've only have ever done once, and those characters have never come out again or anything. It honestly was successful beyond my wildest dreams. It was a fantastic, fantastic campaign. But one of the players in there, and he was in there almost from beginning to end, he was actually a former NFL player, played for the Giants, or he was at least on their practice squad. I don't know if he ever suited up for a game, but doesn't matter. Still, big guy, Great guy, great personality, fun to be around, very generous, good guy all around. Anyway, but very, you know, very much a full-on jock. And I give him a credit because he really, as a role player, he really stretched himself. He created a female character, played her well, and really enjoyed the character. So they're in a city, and they're at this inn, and this guy was just basically going to be like a throwaway NPC. I had some notes on him in the adventure, but he was a halfling, and the characters kind of took a liking to him right from the get-go, so I'm going to grow this guy's relevance in the plot a little bit. And he was an inn owner, and he had a few shops and everything, and his last name was Three Balls, and so everybody referred to him as Master Three Balls, and he was called that for a very specific reason that would be very obvious. So, you know, that's just the GM having a little bit of fun.
This was a surname?
He was a juggler?
Well, I mean, it was his surname, and he had given himself
this. This will, like, run in the family? I mean...
The story I had in my head was that he changed his name, you know, when he had his certain, you know, genetic anomaly show up. So... Anyway, I didn't get that deep into what his backstory was.
So he, like,
was.
Got an ion stone or what? Yeah.
So you say it showed up. So it wasn't something he was born with. At some point in his life,
he was born with it.
Descended.
Yeah. All right. So anyway, so the characters are meeting with Master Three Balls, and I decided that Master Three Balls, because I wanted to, there was two things going on here. One, I had a motivation. I wanted to put a test to the player characters, I wanted to test their integrity for a certain thing. And then I also, as a player, I wanted to test the players to see, I wanted to push them in a role-playing way to see how much I could really get out of them. And I wanted to do it to this guy, Greg, specifically. So what I ended up doing was I ended up creating, Master Three Balls had a little bit of a fetish. And his fetish was human women. And remember, he's a halfling. So... And his fetish was he didn't want to have relations with them. He just wanted to look at them. He just wanted to look at them naked. Okay? That was all he wanted to do. He never wanted to touch them or do anything with them. He just wanted to look. All right? So we get to talking, and Master Three Balls is flirting with Greg's character. And I can't remember Sandasora. I think that was her name. Anyway, so he's flirting with his character, and so eventually they needed to acquire some information. He had that information, so he told her character, "Well, if you want the information, I think that can be arranged. But why don't you and I just get together later on and let's do this?" And there was a very, very heavy implication as to what might be happening, and all the players, all the other characters at the table saw this implication. Okay, it's like the implication for those of you that watch Sunny in Philadelphia. It's the implication. So him and I went off away from the rest of the group because I wanted to keep this part because I knew what was going to happen. I knew what was going to happen, but I wanted to leave it vague for everybody else.
So he wanted plausible deniability.
So
we just know witnesses.
We just go off to a separate part of the room, and
well, baby, we may as well because I'm going to tell everyone we did anyway.
And so I start talking to him about, you know, essentially in character. I'm like, okay, you know, he's doing this, he's doing this. You know, at what point is your character going to go to do this? And so, to his credit, he went for it. He went for the whole thing, and he actually played it pretty much in character. And now, granted, there wasn't between him and I, there was no physical contact because, again, Master Three Balls just likes to look. Because
again, you just wanted to see him naked.
So, you know, he didn't. He personally didn't disrobe or anything like that. No.
But, no, of course not. It was his character.
That's right. It was his character doing this.
Yes.
So, but in story arc wise, he said, yeah, my character will do this, and she will do this. And basically, and I described to him, I said, all right, well, you take off all your clothes. Master Three Balls, you just basically sit on the edge of his bed. He just sits there, and he just stares at you for a little while. And he talks to you. And then he does, and after that was done, he gave the information that was necessary, and you know, and he thanked her profusely. Wow. And she ended up getting a good NPC contact out of it. And who knows what Master Greenballs got out of it, but.
Did he at least give her some jewelry?
I think he ended up giving her
a necklace.
I think he ended up giving her a couple shinies, absolutely.
Pearls. Yeah.
So of course then, you know, we go back to the table and everything, and everybody, you know, is basically staring at Greg and all this, and I told him, I said, it's up to you to say what you want to say. And then he, as his character, he basically played it as, you know, a lady's never gonna reveal her secrets, and he kept that secret as to what it was or what had transpired the entire time. So as a role playing thing, it was fantastic, and he really, I gave him a ton of credit, because I put him purposely in an extremely uncomfortable situation on purpose, and he handled it really, really well. And it was, I don't know, I had a blast. It was awesome.
Chris, I have to understand something here, because I can't wrap my head around it. As a game master, there are times I'm sitting there thinking, wow, it'd be really cool to create this particular scene. You know, have this kind of a climax, or this kind of a, so to speak, or this kind of a moment of role-playing tension, or to see a character grow in this way. What was the thought process that led up to, I have got to get this guy who's a former NFL player in a room by himself and see if his character will take off all of his clothes for a genitally mutated halfling? Well, what in your mind was like, wow, this is what needs to happen?
This is one of those situations where, and we talk about all the time, you've got to know your group. And what did you know about him that made you think this would be a good idea?
To find out. That's just...
Well, and that's the thing, is that the group that we had was predominantly, all except for one person, was all guys. All the time when we game, numerous sexual jokes would fly across the table. We got very saucy in our language every once in a while. And this was one of those moments where, in the campaign, where they were in between critical plot elements. And so it's one of those times when you can have a little bit of fun, you can do something a little bit different, and you can take a little break from the norm. This campaign certainly wasn't like this all the way. This was probably the most extreme example of you know, any type of odd role-playing stuff that I've done, previous story notwithstanding. And so it's one of those things where these ideas just kind of, they just flowed. You know, it seemed to me at the time that this was coming up, I thought to myself, the idea of this person, Master Threeballs, wanting to engage in sexual relations with his character, that's too obvious. That's too obvious, and that's too, I mean, because that was what
he
was implying.
It's too cliche. Too normal.
Well, yeah, and it was too normal. And so I thought to myself, I've got to take this in a different way. I've got to take this in a different direction. So I thought, well, wait, let's just make him a little bit of a fetishist, and let's have this be his fetish. And that's what we did. And it worked out, honestly, it worked out great.
Okay, but this still does answer my question of what was the thought process of, this is going to really enhance the game, because...
I don't know, man. That's just the way my mind worked at the time. Like,
I think I see the pattern. I mean, we've had three stories here. We start off at 14, you know, drunk, watching porn with a group of guys. Then we move to the college years, where we role play with dudes that flash their dicks out at the role playing table. I mean, the logical progression is, okay, now I'm going to, now that I've got more sports oriented people
in a room by himself,
he's going to be fine getting naked.
That's right.
My next goal is
to find a group filled with construction workers.
I was thinking maybe possibly a cop, an Indian, a construction worker, and a sailor.
Yeah. Oh, sure. And maybe a Native American and a guy from the Navy.
Yeah.
You bet.
Yeah. So what have we learned from this story? I want to go around.
Never play in Chris's game.
I was going to start first and say that, but well, I see that John has already said that. Dan, what have you learned?
To steal from Saturday Night Live, apparently if we were ever playing in a Chris game, this is going to count as a dangerous activity, and all the players need to hold hands.
Yes.
And never let go. Because God forbid if he ever isolates one of us, says, hey, I need you to come into a room for a sidebar. No.
Never split the party.
Yes.
Absolutely good. Wayne, what have you learned?
Well, before this,
I love how taking all of you
I
so
knew
long
that it
to
was
answer.
Normal for female player characters to try to seduce other characters. Now I know that if I'm ever in one of Chris's games and the topic of seduction ever comes up at all, I am running out the door.
Very good. I think we've all learned some important lessons today?
John? Yes.
This was a very special episode. I already told you what I learned, which is never play Chris's game.
Honestly, I think this will do nothing but make more people want to sign up for my game.
Especially 4 million of, NFL players, maybe some baseball players. I don't know.
Yeah, I'm just telling you right now, if you run this at Fear the Con, I am not setting aside a bathroom that you can rename the tea room. I'm just telling you that straight up.
Okay? I'm going to run a game called 7 Minutes in Heaven. Is that what you're...
Yeah, and if someone starts flashing their nuts, we will have them and you removed from the con.
We can start a really funny hentai track, guys, and we'll laugh at it and make up new words for it, but it'll be funny. And, like, I won't have a boner, and Chris won't have a boner, and we won't have a pillow above our crotches, and it'll be hilarious.
We're just watching this to laugh at it.
It's ironic.
Yes, it's ironic humor.
Just to be clear, at Fear the Con 5, we are not scheduling any games in the back of Chris's rental van. No official game is scheduled to be there. Despite what he's telling you at the time, no games are in the back of his rental van.
Drives from Iowa, comes with only his wife, got a van ready for 8 people, brings no gear. I don't know why, but
however, there may
crazy.
Be free candy at my events, so.
Yeah, a lot of free candy.
So I've had a couple interesting experiences. Of course, basically with all these now, I think I've essentially shot my wad as far as that goes.
As usual, it's being done with a bunch of guys around.
Yeah, exactly. I got nothing to add to this one.
No, I think that was Chris's bedtime stories is this episode.
I have never done anything in my role playing history that was really ever overtly sexual. I've got to say that my role playing experience was quite the reverse. That my characters were also unromantic and asexual, that it was probably the characters were unrealistic. But as a result, I have no really uncomfortable stories about Chad and I batwinging each other or whatever at the table. So
I like
exploring those themes, though, occasionally, if it's worthwhile, only because the way I look at it, that kind of stuff is... It's real, it's a good story element, and it can add some nice depth and subplot to a game.
Hold on, Chris. You were saying that a 3-bald halfling watching one of your player characters get naked is real.
I'm not saying
that's what you need for realism in your game, is a 3-bald halfling staring at one of your players getting naked.
Can that be the new theme song for Fear the Boot?
I think Mikey's got some new material. Yes. Maybe a new song.
No doubt about it. I bet you that all of my players would definitely remember that particular session. I couldn't forget it.
You can never forget life-scarring events like that.
That's true. I want to draw you.
Draw me like one of your elf girls.
He didn't even draw. This didn't even draw. He just sat there and looked at her naked. I mean, he didn't even use that excuse. I want to sketch you. I mean, that's what you do.
At least Pat makes some veiled reference to taking pictures.
Exactly. No, it's just like, I just want to look at you.
Yeah, he just wanted to look. That was all he
Alrighty.
Wanted to do. He was a very successful businessman, mind you.
Thank you for tuning in. I apologize to all of you who stuck around this long. I will put a link.
Are you going to apologize to us? We can't unhear this.
No, I know. However, I will put in the show notes a link to one of the state's official Crimson Pumpkin posters. So if you want to print this out for use in your neighborhood, if you happen to, I don't know,
have Chris there,
or even just share a state border with Iowa, then and you're worried about this, you'll be.
I'll never get another job again, by the way, nor will I ever get to run for political office.
We've done your future employer and coworker many favors. So, thank you guys for tuning in.
I'm sorry.
And we will catch those of you that just don't know how to unsubscribe in iTunes next time.
Bye.
Later days and better lays.